My name is Dan, if you don't know me. I'm the youth guy here at St. Hills. Tonight I've got a privilege to unpack some of Song of Songs, and I'm quite excited but also nervous, okay? Because I come from a very Asian background, meaning we don't talk about these things. These things are like, you know. So when I've read this book before, for sure, but whenever I read it, it's always like, ooh, like you kind of like read past through it. So I haven't actually done any in-depth study on this before this talk. So it's very interesting for me when I was kind of studying this. And I also start to see how brilliant like the book is. Like it's been written really brilliantly. So I can't wait to share a few things with you guys tonight. But before I do that, I shall pray. So please position yourself into a comfortable and uncomfortable praying positions. Let me pray. God, we thank you for tonight. We thank you for your word. We thank you for your love for us. God, as we come in tonight, I pray that you would prepare our hearts, our minds, our thoughts, our hearing, and everything to receive your word, God. And I pray as I speak that you would speak through me and you would let the words, your words come through me. So I just pray all these in Jesus' name. Amen. Cool. Got a question. So can you guys think of a time when you did something for someone, but it wasn't received well? Even if you meant well, right? And sometimes, I guess like in our best intentions, we can still hurt people. So I'll tell you a story. Ha, thanks. Oh, on top of it. Back in high school, you know, so that was a few years ago, I was 20 when I was in year 12, meaning I've got my green P. So I was the main driver for all my friends and mates, right? And I regularly have friends over after school because I'm like, I used to live in Vermont South, and it was like a good spot for like people to take the tram or the bus. So I had friends over. So this one particular time, a friend was with me and we were hanging out, and then they left the house to go home, right? And so they went to the bus stop. And then at the bus stop, they called and say, "Oh, I left a book. Sorry, can you keep it for me?" And I said, "Oh, I can come and give it to you," right? And the person was like, "Oh, the bus is leaving in about 3 minutes, you know." But I said, "No worries. I can do it in under a minute." So I kind of like walked towards the door, opened the door, and I saw my dad, my father. Okay, you guys won't know this, right? My dad used to work in the UN, and he used to work in Iraq, Sudan, war-torn countries. So he would come and visit us in Australia for 2 weeks every 2 months. This was such times, right? He was walking in from the airport, and I saw him, I said, "Oh, hi Dad, I'll come back soon," and I ran out, because I was like really wanting to give my friend the book and prove to that friend that I can do it. And then I came back to find out that my dad was actually quite upset with me, that he didn't actually talk to me or look me in the eyes or smile at me. And I felt bad, but I was kind of like also kind of confused, because I was like, you know, I can give my dad my full attention when I come back, and I was planning to do it, right? And I did say hi to him, you know. It's not like I ignored him, and I have plenty of time to spend time with him, like 2 weeks, right? But I think for my dad, what he saw was he came home and his son said, "Oh, I'll be back," and ran out. Yeah. Still affects me to this day, emotionally, thinking about it. But, you know, for him, it was a sacrifice to come back, because he would spend half that 2 weeks trying to acclimatize, right? So to him, it's a big deal. For me, I'm like, "Oh, yeah, whatever, ran out." That's just one example of, you know, like, I didn't really consider my dad. So if I ask of you guys of a time where you think, you know, "Oh, I meant well, I didn't mean like anything bad, but it just wasn't received well, or someone meant well towards you and then you didn't receive it well, right? I'm sure you can think of a time like that. Actually, think of how many gifts you've re-gifted, right? I've done a few, so sorry. I'll come back to this story later, but we're talking about, you know, love, right? Like Song of Songs, love. So let's look at the word love. It's an interesting word in English, in our culture, because we use the word love for almost everything. I love this song. I love dinner, you know? Love this restaurant. Great food. I love my family. I love my friend. I love God, right? But they can't all mean the same thing, right? Because all different things. And I think sometimes when we say I love something, we mean it gives me something I enjoy, right? Food. We say we love food because you love how it tastes and make you feel. Songs. You love how it makes you feel and think of someone, for example. Places. You love what you experience there or memories that are attached to the place. Now, it's not necessarily wrong when you're thinking about food, music, songs, or places to kind of like love for what it gives you. But we're in trouble, I think, when we begin loving people that way. I love you for what you do for me. I love you for how you make me feel, right? I love you for having you belong to me. Right? It's a bit weird, but sometimes it's true. Or I love the status, the security, the satisfaction you give me. Now, they're not all bad in themselves, but I think there's a fine line between a love that sees others, cares for others, and it's mutual and it's sacrificial, the good kind, right? The one that the Bible endorses and Jesus demonstrated. But there's also a kind of love, merely just uses another person, the distorted kind, right? And for simplicity's sake, I'll call it the bad love from now on, so that you can kind of easy to remember. So today we're going to look at the two kinds of love that's contrasted in the Book of Songs. Now, a quick reminder, right? Song of Songs, you guessed it, it's a song. The greatest of all song, the songs of songs, right? Same as the Holy of Holies, right? It's poetry. Now, this week I told a friend that we're going through the Book of Songs of Songs. And he said, oh yeah, isn't that about Solomon and his lover? And I'm like, yeah, kind of. And then I was like, what I want you to know is that there are multiple ways of interpreting Songs of Songs, especially about Solomon, right? And I've heard sermons about how Solomon and that whole thing represents Christ and his bride. And I think it has its merits, but there's also another side to it, which I didn't see at first, okay? Not on my first read, not on my fifth read. It's not too obvious. But when I looked deeper into the background, the word plays, the subtle hints, I found something really interesting. And what's interesting was might not necessarily be the beloved that the lover was talking about. Two separate characters. In fact, Solomon might represent the bad kind of love. So we're going to go with that, okay? So there are four main characters. There is the woman. Her voice is kind of throughout the whole thing. The beloved, the person that the woman is kind of like dedicating it to. And you can hear the beloved talk back through the recounting. You have Solomon, who appeared in a few places, three places actually. And then the daughters of Jerusalem, who is the recipient of this whole song. Does it make sense? I'm going to get a bit nerdy, guys. So if you're not as nerdy as me, I have some images for you. So let's quickly go over a few things. Can you guys read any of that? Cool. Who is this coming from the wilderness? So I'm going to look at chapter 3 first, okay? Like a column of smoke, perfumed with myrrh, incense, keep going, the nobles of Israel, all of them wearing the sword. You know, Solomon made himself a carriage. Cool. When you look at this, what do you see? I'm going to do kind of like call and response. What do you think this kind of looks like to you as you're kind of reading this? Someone's coming, all of the splendor, nice. A royal parade, great. Cool. Yeah. It looks like, what's really interesting is it doesn't look like a wedding at first. It looks like a parade and showing off splendor. And then you find out at the end, it's like, oh, that's a wedding. Because it says, on the day of his wedding, the day his heart rejoiced. So let's unpack that a little bit. So next slide. There we go. Who is this? Which is really interesting. If you read in English, you don't notice this, but the word this has a feminine pronoun. So basically it's saying, who is this woman coming up from the wilderness? That could be one way, you know, of interpreting. Who is she, basically, right? Coming up from the column of smoke. Smoke. The word in the temple. There is the word carriage in other translations, litter. That basically, do you guys know what a litter or a carriage is? Well, basically it's where people are, you know, like, so that the king doesn't have to walk. But that word in Hebrew is literally the word for bed, like bed you sleep in, right? There is wood, silver, and gold, right, from Lebanon. Wood from Lebanon. Some commentators think it's a strong case for Solomon's throne hall, his kind of like palace, basically, because it's got the same materials that I mentioned in 1 Kings. With the love of the daughters of Jerusalem, it's really interesting to hear another kind of like translation slash where it kind of stopped in the reading. But it's very likely that it's referring to the acts of physical lovemaking, okay? And it's combined. It actually looks like it's a picture of a heavily defended bed of the wealthy Solomon, who has all things at his disposal, and who's on a conquest for women. So out of that, we can see that there's three things happening. One, the first one, Solomon was impersonal. He was distant. I don't know if... Solomon appeared three times, right? Firstly, at the title, where it talks about Song of Song, which is Solomon's. Secondly, in the this chapter, 3, look upon the King Solomon. And then thirdly, in chapter 8, Solomon had a vineyard at Baal-Hamon. The second and the third time, the lovers seem to be quite distant in how she's kind of talking about it. Instead, she describes what's happening. Okay, and whereas when she's talking about her beloved, the words are very dreamy and filled with desirable language, love, right? And then there are 60 men, right? Which is double what David had, by the way. David had 30 strong men. Some commentators suggest that they're not to keep the intruders away, but to keep the bride in. So when you kind of look at all of that together, you can see that it's quite impersonal. It's distant because there's no talking happening. It's quite coercive. And it's confirmed in chapter 8, when we read chapter 8, and this will come later. You see that Solomon is trying to buy the love of the lover, and then got rejected, basically. So first, you can see that it's impersonal. Secondly, you can see that it's, I would say something like wrongfully inclusive or polygamous. In 1 Kings... 1 Kings chapter 11, it tells us who Solomon was. So I'll read it a bit, okay? King Solomon, however, loved many foreign wives beside Pharaoh's daughter, Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites. They were from nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, you must not intermarry with them because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods. Nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. Wrongfully inclusive. He had 700 wives of royal birth, 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. 1,000, basically, right? As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. So you can see that he is not committed to just one person. In fact, he had 1,000 wives. And you can see that in that poetry before the litter, the bed, you know, kind of like was adorned by the love of the daughters of Jerusalem. If you read that carefully, it's not that Solomon loved the daughters of Jerusalem, which they, in one kind of commentary, it assumes it's the wives, the concubines of Solomon, right? So if you carefully read that, it's not that he loved them. It's that they were made to lavish on him. He is the object of love. Does it make sense? Polygamous. Thirdly, you can see that he is very much self-serving. Notice that, you know, it looked like more like an army march and like a parade rather than a wedding, like a normal wedding, right? When it's revealed that it's a wedding, probably meant to like shock you guys. Solomon was pleased, right? He was being carried by the others. And the woman just points to Solomon for everyone to look. So he is impersonal, polygamous, self-serving. Everyone kind of get that so far? Cool. Now, not everyone will relate with having 700 wives. But we have moments where we are distant to people that we love or try to be inclusive and actually miss out on prioritizing people that matter to us. Or we forget to think about other people around us and we became more self-centered. Let me quickly go back to the story of my dad, right? I definitely didn't try to greet him properly because I was only thinking about trying to prove to my friend that I can get to the bus in under a minute in order to help my friend get their book back. I forgot to prioritize my dad, who matters a lot to me. In fact, I don't even speak to that friend anymore, you know. And that book definitely could have waited until the next day where I'll see them at school. So in your lives, we may not have 1,000 wives and concubines, but we will have times and moments where we get distracted by the wrong things. Now, on the contrary, the beloved in the song is different. So let's kind of quickly look through the beloved. So you can see she, he, she. You can kind of tell who's speaking. It's intimate and invitational. You can see the image of gazelle, you know, speeding across the mountains and hills towards the woman who waits for him. I want to remind you, it's not a metaphor, like a physical metaphor, but it's like an emotional metaphor, if that makes sense. That's how it feels, right? It's the image of wooing, right? He tries to catch a glimpse of her through the window and the lattice and to strike up a conversation with her. He speaks with her with an invitation, asking her to go away with him, right? So it's intimate, it's invitational. Whereas with Solomon, it was very much the opposite. It's exclusive. You can see that, you know, in verse 16, the beloved is mine and I am his. It's mutual. The voice of my beloved in verse 8 and response from the beloved is my love, my beautiful one. It's very mutual. That's not one-sided. Okay. I've kind of like quickly run through that. Now, what does it mean for us? Okay. I want to kind of say this first. For those of us in this room who might have experienced the distorted love, the bad love, I want to say this book is actually rebuking the bad kind of love. And regardless of if you've experienced romantic relationships or not, this is a good model of love that we can put our hope in, right? And ultimately, Jesus has modeled it already. And I think this book can be read kind of on two levels. The first level is celebrating human romantic relationships. But the second level is also a reflection of God's love for his people. Because good human relationships ultimately points us towards God's love. And that love should be intimate, not distant, or not just for show. It should be exclusive, prioritizing the right person and not wrongfully being inclusive. And then mutual, not self-serving, not about loving what they can give you, nor coercive. Now, there is a love chapter 2, right? It says, catch for us the foxes, the little foxes that ruined the vineyards. What are the foxes? Well, Solomon, in 1 Kings chapter 3, okay? So it's like, it says, Solomon loved the Lord, and the Lord loved Solomon. But then 8 chapters later, 1 Kings 11:4, which we just read before, but in the end, his wives turn his heart away from God. Distorted love often begins through small things, small foxes, a little bit of dishonesty, you know, it's a white lie, a little bit of disrespect, a little bit of envy towards something outside, small thing that doesn't look like it's much at a time. But Solomon's downfall wasn't, you know, in just one big thing. It's many little small things that leads to the big thing. In fact, it's 1,000 little things, I guess. It's not that little, marrying 1,000 people. But if you look at David, right? David's quite the same. In the time where he's meant to be going back, that little fox got to him. Soul, pride, right? The vineyard is usually damaged by one little fox at a time. Now, how does it apply to us? I think this applied to us in two things. First, our human relationships, but I think more so in our relationship with God. So what do we do practically? I think this is what we do. First, you look at your important relationships. If you're married, that's your spouse. If you're not, then it's family, close friends. And check if there are little foxes like self-centeredness or, you know, do we hear them? Do we listen to them? Exclusivity, intimacy, that's sure to share, right? Don't be overly intimate with people who shouldn't carry those burdens. Boundaries are good. So that's the first thing, our human relationships. You know, look out for little foxes in our relationships. Secondly, and I think more importantly, look at our relationship with God. Things just for show. Are we just coming to church out of obligation? Or do we do it out of love for God and for people and gratitude for Him, right? Are we living our lives as worthy of our calling as sons and daughters, as bride of Christ, right? Or are we self-centered and do we treat God like Him only when we need Him or we're in trouble? Like, that resonates to me a lot. Sometimes I treat God like a genie. Now, some of you guys may have experienced a bad kind of love, and I want to tell you, God's design is the good kind of love, and that there is hope. In fact, we can see this hope in Philippians. Philippians chapter 2, 6 to 8. Who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Jesus came to be intimate with us, he became skin, right? He is invitational, he's asking you, and not coercive. He's asking for us to be holy, to be set apart, to be exclusive. He doesn't take advantage, but he serves. He was obedient to the point of his death, so that we may call him our bridegroom. And he is the ultimate king who's coming back to get his bride, his church, right? And because of that, we can do this. And this is a few verses before this. Philippians 2, chapter 2, verse 3 and 4. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but of others. And I think my hope for tonight is that we become a bit more aware of how we might treat people around us, but also trust God that He is the ultimate good and He is the ultimate. I'm going to pray, but before I pray, I also want to say something. As you're listening to this, if you have things that are coming up and you feel like, man, I need to like talk to someone, pray about this. At the end, when we're doing worship, you know, songs, myself, Kane will be there with maybe a few other people. If you need prayer, please come to us and we'll be very happy to pray for you. So let me pray to end, and then we're going into communion right after that. So let me pray. For who you are, thank you for your word, and thank you that you are the ultimate good form of love. God, I pray if we have experienced a distorted version of love in our lives, and if we find it hard to trust you, I pray that you would help us in that. Pray your Holy Spirit, you'll be with us and help us know that you're gentle and you're kind and that you are good. God, I also pray for the rest of this sermon series, as we go through them, may we know how much you love us and may we know how much you care. So I pray all these things in your name.